Welcome to a special COVID-19 episode of the Broken Brain Podcast. I'm your host, Drew Pruitt, and almost every day this week, we've been doing special bonus episodes for you, our community. My team and I are bringing on a new guest almost again every day who we think can help support your mental, emotional, physical, and spiritual health during these challenging and reflective times. Today's guest is a marriage and family therapist, Michael Latimer, and we're talking about all things relationships during self-quarantine and how couples can use these trying and often challenging times to actually double down on improving their relationship and their communication. A little bit about today's guest. Michael Latimer has been in practice for over 15 years now, helping clients to explore and resolve relationship issues, as well as anxiety, depression, trauma, and addiction. He incorporates cognitive behavioral techniques, mindfulness practices, narrative therapy, and attachment theory, which looks at the ways in which our childhoods, and our partner's childhood can impact and affect their own relationship to themselves and others too. Michael specializes in couples therapy and is certified in the Gottman Method, a practical approach that helps couples strengthen their friendships, repair after fights, and compromise without, and this is the key, without giving up on their core needs. He sees couples and individuals in person. I've been working with him, with my partner here in Los Angeles, and does couples coaching online, which is a blessing, especially in the current state of the world that we're in. You can find out more about him at michaellatimer.com, and the link to his website is in the show notes. Michael, welcome to the Broken Brain Podcast. Thank you for being here.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Drew. Nice to see you.
You know, I want to start off with something that I know that you'd probably agree with, definitely agree with, which is that our heart goes out to everybody who's been impacted and is in a current state of fear or anxiety, whether you're impacted on a health level or financial level with the economic times. So this goes without saying is that, you know, our heart goes out to everybody that's out there. And Michael, you know, our heart especially goes out to a lot of couples, which is how this episode came up. Couples asking me like, hey, can you bring somebody on to talk about the challenges that we're uniquely going through? So Michael, I want to start off with starting at the basics, which is that in these challenging and unprecedented times, what are some of the unique stressors that specifically couples are finding themselves in?
This quarantine has really, played with everyone's mind. I mean, couples are together 24/7, which brings up all kinds of stressors that were there before, stressors that are new. Just being with your partner for 24/7 is a stressor in itself, right? I think couples with kids, they have kids underfoot, all day. They're having to educate them. There's a lot of stress around that. Couples are worried about finances. Maybe they've been laid off.
That's a big one.
Yeah, it's a big one. Work is where people have their identity. It's a very important thing. They learn, they have connection there. So when, and not to mention the finances of that, right, which is very important itself. So those stresses are compounded by this quarantine.
And I think of a quote, I know you're a fan of Esther Perel too.
Yes, yeah.
My friend Esther Perel, she says, what she always says, like what we used to get from an entire village in the modern day of romanticism, mm-hmm. which she was talking about before the quarantine, right. What we used to get before from an entire village, we now expect to get from one partner. And she was more talking about that from the standpoint of when we are dating or in marriage, we think that one person's going to be our everything. This one person's right. going to be our all. But now in quarantine, it's kind of like a lot of couples who don't even believe that have been forced to be in a situation where your partner is your best friend, they're your confidant, uh-huh. they're who you're going to, they're uh-huh. your therapist.
Uh-huh. Right.
Are you finding that couples are finding themselves in that situation?
Yeah, and not only are they finding that their therapist and their partner and all that, they're also finding that they're each other's mother and father, and that creates problems oftentimes, right?
Right, it's like you are now in a place where you're working in the same place.
Uh-huh.
If you have kids, which I don't, but I can only imagine you're homeschooling, so now you're a teacher.
Right.
You now are having two people wear a hat, sometimes the same hat, sometimes different hat, but they're everything. And there's a lot of room for friction when that happens.
Absolutely. You know, I oftentimes talk about the polarity between couples, and that's where they might be, their opposites come together. And Gottman even talks about conflict.
And you're talking about John Gottman.
John and Julie Gottman. They're the created the Gottman method and have done tons of research since the 70s on couples, what makes them work, what makes couples successful, what are the predictors of a successful marriage, what are the predictors of divorce. So he in his research just showed that basically 69% of conflicts aren't really resolvable. And that can be scary to some people. It can be a sense of offer some people relief because they're like, oh my gosh, we can't resolve things. But the reason why I say that is that, you know, we have two different people coming together. They're two different personalities. And so there's naturally going to be conflict. There's naturally going to be stress. And it's really how we deal with that conflict that is a predictor of whether our relationship.
Yeah. If I'm hearing you correctly, really the silver lining is that, like, of that almost 70%, if 70% of the things that you and your partner fight or have conflict about, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, and we'll get to that later on, 70% of the things that couples fight and have conflict about, there's not actually a resolution that's just apparent, which means it's not about the thing that we're arguing about. It's how we go and navigate the process of having conversation and fighting.
That's exactly right. You know, there's that expression that it's, you know, they're going to get divorced over putting the cap on the toothpaste, but it's never about the toothpaste.
Right? It's never about the toothpaste. That's such an important thing to say. You know, I think you wrote a quote that I want to pull from some writings that you sent to me before this interview to inspire some questions. And I want to state this quote. I want you to expand on it and help us understand what it means. Okay. So your quote says, when we are under stress, which we're very much in these times, we become a heightened version of ourselves. What do you mean by that? And how does that specifically apply to couples?
Okay. So say a person tends to be a little anxious. And this kind of reflects back to what I was saying about different personalities. Our personalities become a little more heightened. So say if we're a person that in order to manage stress, we take action, right? We do things. We want to fix things and, you know, keep moving. And then say there's another person that when they're under stress, they need to just take it easy. They need to try and calm their mind. They get too activated. Perhaps they've had trauma in their childhood. Perhaps, you know, they've dealt with depression or severe anxiety. And they've learned how to manage it. Well, when we're under tremendous amounts of stress, our sort of default mechanisms kick back in. So even if we've worked on ourselves and figured out ways to deal with certain aspects of our personalities, which maybe don't always help us, under extreme stress, oftentimes we sort of default back to the old way. Not always, you know, really, because the brain can be rewired. And so ways of doing that can allow us sort of to have a new default.
Right, but go back to our default neural network.
That's correct. Yes, great way of saying it. So when you have two people and say their defaults are opposite, that's the polarity I was talking about, that can really create a lot of stress. For instance, say one person, the one that needs to get all the information from the news, like that helps them maintain their stability. It's like, I want to know everything about what's happening, where the curve is, what I need to do, just all of the sort of, sometimes even the sort of noise around it, but that helps them. And say the partner doesn't want to hear it. Like, I can't hear any more news. I don't want to watch it. It stresses me out. I'm too anxious. I'm afraid everything's going to be hard, you know, going to end for us. So how do those couples deal with that, right? The one partner who wants all the information might need to talk about it, might need to vent to the other partner. And the other part's like, I can't hear this. Don't tell me this. So that can create conflict. Now, you know, you mentioned earlier how in this time, our partners become everything to us, right? And that's true. And we have to remember that they can't be everything to us. Right.
Yeah, no one person can be everything to us. It's not healthy for us. It's not healthy for them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, and that's a great thing to remember in couples. It's like, okay, how can I be there for my partner? What is my partner's needs? And to know our own limits. And then also to know our partner's limits, right? So for instance, in that example I was giving, they might have a conversation. And this sort of reflects back to how to help communication in this time, because communication is key. It really is. It is, in terms of relationships. And I'll talk about this later or a little bit, that in terms of helping communication, it's more about how we feel about our partners and how we treat each other than actually what we're talking about oftentimes. So in this particular dynamic with this couple, with the two extremes, right? No news and all the news. What we would do is one partner would say to the other, here's what I'm feeling. And always talking in feeling words is better than descriptions. Like, I'm feeling really scared. I'm feeling anxious about this. I know I'm catastrophizing, right? As opposed to saying, oh my gosh, this is such a catastrophe. What's going to happen? The world's going to fall apart, right? That can create more anxiety for the partner who's listening, who actually gets triggered by lots of reactivity, lots of fear, you know, and bad news. So the trick would be for the partner, for them to be talking and for the one to speak in feeling terms and just listening, telling the other partner. I hope this is not confusing, because
this is super clear to me. And so it's like in that example of, you know, two people in a relationship. And by the way, I know a lot of couples that are in this space, you know, every couple, every person has a different information threshold, a different level of stress threshold. Like for me, if I am around any news that's not slow news, if there's somebody that's around me, my partner doesn't really even watch the news, so that's a beautiful thing. But if there's somebody even that's around me, a friend or a, you know, anybody, especially during this time, if the news is always around, it actually just makes me anxious.
Right.
And so if one partner is in that situation, and let's say another partner is like, their particular, at least their thought is, I need to see the news because it helps me feel like I need, how I can navigate the world. What is your suggestion of how that could be brought up? Like, how would you say that?
Right, exactly. So they would sit down and say, okay, listen, our personalities are getting activated here, right? And hopefully the couple knows each other. I mean, this might be an opportunity to find these things out. But usually when couples have been together, they hopefully can understand different aspects of their personality and say, I just would love for you to listen. And that's really another key. Part of this is just really listening to our partners, validating their feelings, and just showing empathy. Because we can't fix this. We can't fix what's going on. All we can do is really be there for our partners. So the one partner, let's say the one that gets really anxious, says, honey, I'm feeling really anxious and all of this news is really scaring me. I need to not hear it from so that I can maintain my stability here, so that I can not be just so frightened. And saying, you know, I know that you would like to hear the news. Here's what I would love from you. It's just, let's not talk about it. Don't bring it up to me unless there's something that's really important for me to know. And then I'd like to know that. But other than that, I'd rather not. And the other,
okay. Or watch, if you want to watch it, you can watch it in your room, maybe in the living area. That would be really helpful to me.
Right. Absolutely. And that's a great way, especially if you know your partner. Another thing could be is actually even asking, saying, what are you needing here? You know, partner, well, I need to vent. I need to talk about this. I need to see it. And then, you know, this partner say, okay, I understand that. So I could maybe listen to you. Maybe I could hear this for maybe 10 minutes, right, a day. And then maybe suggest if they need to talk, maybe they could talk to a friend who maybe could vent together if that's what they need to do. Suggestions, watch it in your room, or if you're going to need to turn on something and I'm in the room, let me know and I'll go outside for a minute. Exactly. Find ways in which you can honor your partner's need, but also each other's needs, and also take care of yourself.
Because what's very stressful to a lot of individuals, and it can go both ways, is feeling like, oh my gosh, I have this information about the next thing that's happened in some city. I need to talk about it right now because it's all bubbling up in me. And so that person may feel like they need to talk to somebody. And on the other side, the person who's feeling anxious can feel like at any time I could get hit with news that just totally derails me. And the person could be bringing up, my partner could be bringing it up, my spouse, boyfriend, girlfriend, whoever it might be. It's like, it's nonstop. And so it's like, okay, if you need to talk about it, maybe like 10 minutes at like 2 o'clock or whatever, we can talk about it at that time period. But just the onslaught of the regularity of hearing about it can create a lot of anxiety on both parties.
Absolutely. And you know, you said something which makes me think about something. One thing that's very helpful in this and to help partners remain connected or feel connected is also having set times to talk, right? You know, make sure you connect throughout the day. There's something an exercise I do with couples and encourage them to do, and it's called a stress relieving conversation. And this was something that Neil Jacobson sort of came up with in the 90s, and John Gottman uses it as well. And they found that couples who did this had much happier relationships because they're actually talking to each other. Let me describe what the exercise is.
Please.
It's basically no longer than 20 minutes. Each person talks for 10 minutes. And you find a time. It's a ritual, really, which can help couples feel more connected. So maybe before they go to bed or at some point in the day, maybe over dinner. That dinner's not great. You want to find a time when you can really focus on each other. And the first partner goes and just for 10 minutes just talks about their day, talks about what's on their mind. We never talk about problems between the couples during this time because that would just sort of lead to paths, you know, paths we don't want to go down and can really lead to sometimes some upset and not feeling connected. So all the other partner, the listener, does is just listen. I said earlier where you sort of listen and you validate and empathize. So something like, oh, honey, that must be so hard. Or, gosh, yeah, that, you know, maybe it's just talking about the boss did something. They say, oh, gosh, that boss, you know, he doesn't know what he's talking about. You want to do something that's very, very encouraging and just empathic. And then once that 10 minutes is done and you actually time it into a timer, the other partner talks. And after a while, if a couple incorporates this into their lives, over time, they begin talking about more meaningful things and how they're feeling. And it helps each other know themselves, know their partners on a deeper level, and they feel more connected. Again, I talk about the connection. That's what's so important in communication and in the success and happiness of couples.
And I think something that's very powerful that about that is, again, just going back to some of the research that you were talking about early on, it's not even that you and your partner have to agree about everything. It's just knowing that they've heard you out and that they understand you. I used to have a mentor that would say, you know, take anybody in your life that you are having a challenge with. And imagine that I sat you down in a movie theater and you could see their entire life on a movie, but if they were 80 years old or 45 years old or 20 years old, the entire movie would play in, let's say, 90 minutes. Mm-hmm. Now, you wouldn't necessarily agree with all their actions, and you may even disagree with a lot of their actions, but there would be no part of you that wouldn't understand how they came and arrived at the place that they're at because you had seen everything that made them who they is. And I think that happens in relationships too. It's not so much about being on the same page about every single thing. It's about feeling like, wow, my partner has taken the time to listen and understand me, and that is worth so much.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, that's interesting. Reminds me of an interesting story. When I lived in New York, I don't know if you know Eric Bogosian, this sort of one-man performance artist. He had done a show, and it was a one-person show about an hour and a half long, 90 minutes, like you're saying. And the show starts off with this, you see a man who's homeless, who looks crazy, right? Looks like, literally, like saying things that don't make sense, it's disheveled, just don't understand anything. See that for about 45 seconds or a minute. Curtain goes to black. Next thing you know, it opens up, and there's this guy in a suit and tie. He's talking on the phone, talking about his family. Goes on, and just, you know, unfold this sort of monologue going on. And all of a sudden, we're at the end of the show, and we're seeing the very first scene. And every bit of it makes sense. We understand every word he's saying. Doesn't look crazy at all. looks, you have compassion, you care about this person. And that's what you're saying there about the movie. It's so true. The more we have an experience of a person and know who they are and what has made them that way, the more we can be compassionate, empathic, and really love them. You know, our vulnerabilities are oftentimes when we feel most connected, even though we often learn that you can't be vulnerable, right? We need to know everything. We need to be perfect. We need to be the strong rock all the time. You know, sometimes we're not. And a lot of times we're not. And that allows for us to be loved by our partners too.
So right before this interview, I asked my Instagram audience for some questions that I'm going to sprinkle in here throughout the questions that I've put together for us. And actually, there's a perfect question that comes to this time period. So now we're talking about how important communication is and how central it is to understanding, even if it doesn't mean that you walk away on the same in agreeance with how to handle a situation. Just the power of listening is there.
Right. So
one person wrote in and they said, what if your partner just does not want to or didn't grow up in a household and circumstances that is used to communication? How do you approach it, especially in these unique times of quarantine where you don't have necessarily always access to a therapist or other situations? Like, how do you bring up to them in a loving way that sitting down and having conversations separate from away from the TV, away from dinner, where you're really listening to each other, is central and important to the relationship?
You know, you said something that's really important, Drew, about how do I bring up in a loving way? And that is so crucial to any conversation, especially something where we're dealing with conflict or disappointment or a complaint, you know. In fact, Gottman and Robert Levinson, I believe, in the 70s, did this sort of longitudinal study. And what they did, they observed couples, and they said, we want you to solve a conflict in 15 minutes. And they just watched it. And they followed these couples for 9 years. And after that time, they were able to predict, I believe, 90%, with 90% accuracy, who would stay married and who was divorced, simply because of how they won that conflict, right? And the first 3 minutes of a conversation really determine how that conversation goes. There's something we call, what is it exactly?
Is it a soft starter? Is that the methodology?
We'll go that way. There's another statistic I want to give you, which was really amazing about how people, not necessarily a soft start, but I think it's turning toward, a soft startup. That's what we do when we talk about a loving startup. So rather than saying, like, for instance, this person, the woman you're talking about, rather than saying, and I'm not suggesting this is how she would respond, but, you know, I don't know why you don't want to talk. It's so important. You know, it feels like you're not even interested in me, right? Actually, that's a better way to start it.
Like somebody watching TV and one partner snapping and saying, you're always watching TV.
Exactly.
Paying attention to me.
That's right. Hey, why don't you turn off the TV? You don't even care about me. You know, all you care about is the news. Right. Exactly.
Yeah, that's an example of a harsh startup.
Right.
You're already putting the person in defensive mode. And as, you know, Byron Katie, the spiritualist, says, like, defense is the first act of war. So you start off on defense, that person's ready to go to war.
That's exactly right.
Winning.
Exactly right. So instead, you might say, hey, sweetie, I'm feeling really lonely right now, you know, or I'm feeling like I would like to connect and talk. Would you mind spending a little time with me? Right. Now, hopefully, the partner would be willing to do that. If they're not, and maybe they say, you know, I want to finish watching my program, then the partner takes that in, saying, okay, I get you, that's important. Can we talk after the program? And since he doesn't like to talk, it might not even be that he needs to talk. Part of it is, I mean, if this is something that's a real history of his and they're not used to talking and him talking like that, if he has an interest in learning to do that, that's one thing, and that's important. And certainly in couples work, I would be encouraging that, and we want to understand what it is about talking. We would sort of work with that. It might be more difficult now, you know, at home, when you're together 24/7, to make those huge changes. But what could happen if she's able to say, look, can you listen to me for a while, or can I talk to you? But in a soft and understanding way, that might help her feel connected. Right.
Making it about her needs, in this case of a him and a her, she, you know, the partner who's requesting it, saying like, I need to talk. I would love to share what I'm going through, and, you know,
that's exactly right.
Talk about some things that are on my mind.
Right. And could even say, you know, I don't need you to talk. I just would love for you to hold my hand. I just want to feel together right now. Right. I want us to feel like a team. And you know, who knows? She might even ask, saying, how are you feeling these days? Or what have you been thinking? Right. Or even, you know, if that's not where he wants to go, hey, what was the TV show you were watching? I mean, just to show some interest and see if there's a connection on his part wanting to talk to her. But I think the important piece is when you're wanting to ask your partner to do something, when you're making a request, we don't want to blame, we don't want to criticize, we want to use a soft and startup.
Because sometimes if we've held it in, our request for asking, or we feel like we've done it, or we've mentioned it during somebody's watching a TV show, or in right. passing while somebody's driving home from work or whatever, one partner may have that all bubbled up, and then it right. just explodes. It's like, we don't ever talk. And it's a statement rather than a genuine request on a personal level, even separate out of my relationship, which, you know, we have, because we have access to a therapist like yourself, we've gotten off to a great start early on in having incredible communication. But even unrelated to couples, I noticed that even my father and I, who have an incredible communication now, there was a period of time where I was transitioning from being, you know, pursuing higher education to being an entrepreneur. And I made a really tough decision that my family didn't agree with then, of dropping out of college. And I was the first to do that in my family. My dad really, you know, he didn't understand why I was making that decision. He couldn't really see that pathway forward. This is almost 20 years ago now for me. And I remember one time just talking to my dad and feeling like we had a disconnection, and calling up at work and saying, hey dad, you know, I feel like we don't really talk and connect because there's this thing that's there between us. If possible, when you're done with work, I'd love to just sit down away from the TV, away from the family, and just us get a chance to talk and connect. And I can remember I had all these stories in my head about how my dad was not interested in talking to me at that time. He was busy. You know, he wouldn't listen to me. And when I asked him, he said, absolutely. And he had never just been asked directly at that time. Now, maybe that's not everybody's experience in some of this resentment. But either way, if you have not asked directly, you don't know if the person's going to say yes, no, or anything else.
Absolutely. And that's a big part of a soft and startup, actually. It's the I feel, I need, and then ask. And, you know, it puts us in a vulnerable position because our partner might say no, and then, okay, where do we go from there? But like you're saying is, hey, we might be surprised. The partners might.
And I think the other thing is that we can't always be afraid of conflict, because sometimes people are afraid of rocking the boat. You know, there's this great quote that I remember from William Burroughs, the author and artist. He said, if you're not growing, you're dying. And sometimes the negativity or friction that's there right now, couples may not want to rock the boat because they don't want to make it worse. And I'm sure, you know, you have to navigate that for your own individual situation. But if your partner blows up at an honest request, if your partner overreacts at something, that's not a bad thing. That energy has been going on for a while. It just came up in this moment.
That's right. And it can lead to actually a more meaningful conversation. I mean, look, if a partner blows up and gets angry, probably a good thing to do is to sort of take a little break, right? Even the one who's on the receiving end of that can say, hey, you know what? I need to just have a few minutes here, and then we can come back and talk about this. And that's a really important piece. You know, oftentimes, the person who's yelling or exploding could be flooded, right? And really want to calm ourselves down before we can actually have a productive conversation. I use timeouts, you know, and those are, so it's a technique that couples agree on. Often in my work, we decide what are the boundaries around the timeout, what do they look like, maybe going away for an hour. During that time, you don't want to ruminate on what you're so angry about and what you're going to say and sort of make your case. You want to really separate from those sort of attack thoughts and those sort of blaming thoughts. You want to just try to relax. Maybe even say to yourself, especially during this time, it's like, you know what? We want to make this work. We're gonna talk about this. We're gonna communicate. There's something more important here. You know, maybe you can tell yourself those things, but certainly you don't want to be just feeding the fire during a timeout. Once that happens, come back together and maybe start talking about it.
You've also shared in extreme situations where couples are really hitting a roadblock. Obviously, if anybody's in that situation, it's really important to work with a coach, a therapist, somebody that you trust that's out there. You know, Michael sees people online. He does coaching online. I send a bunch of people to him. You can find out, you know, more information in the show notes below. This isn't a plug, but I just believe in couples therapy so much that I'm such an advocate for it. But you've said in extreme situations, if it's not there and you don't have access to that right now, even writing a letter to your partner can be right. a helpful tool. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, you know, actually I heard a talk from Esther Perel. She was talking about this, saying, you know, if you can't even talk in those moments, that maybe a text or a letter or an email, just even though you're in the same house together, maybe in the same room, but it gives you an ability to think clearly and to write down your thoughts. And you can just basically say that, listen, I know you're upset. I know I'm upset. We're under a lot of stress. But I know, you know, what you're needing right now. That's not the best way to say it, but I, you know, the partner might have asked for something, or you might know things about your partner, saying, look, here's what I can do for you now. I would like to do this. And maybe apologize, you know, apology, empathy is really important. These are all ways of sort of making a repair. So you make a repair in the letter. And let me talk about making a repair first. So, even after a timeout, you know, making a repair is really, really important. The repairs that aren't made through a couple's relationship are the things that ultimately build up. Like you're saying, when a person explodes, those are the things that fights become about. You know, those are the things that resentment are made of.
That's actually such an important point. So I just want to reiterate it for our audience. When repair doesn't happen, resentment is on the other side of it.
Yes. Yes. I say, you know, Carrie Fisher is in Star Wars and Hero's Daughter. She did a one-woman show out here in Los Angeles, which I saw, and she said this one thing, which I thought was fantastic. She said, repair is like feeding yourself poison and expecting someone else to die. And I thought, you know, it's so true. Did I say repair? Did I say resentment?
You said repair, but you meant
resentment. Resentment. I just realized. Yeah, you were thinking, what is he saying? Yeah, resentment is like feeding yourself poison and expecting someone else to die.
It's so true. And that resentment builds up over a period of time. And sometimes what I see, just, you know, there's a group of guys, friends of mine, that go hiking every Thursday, and we have very honest conversations about life. And we talk about relationships, and a lot of them own businesses. So right now we've been doing virtual Zooms, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Together. And one of the, you know, one time one of the gentlemen in the group was saying, like, you know, I am recognizing that I have so much resentment built up in my relationship that I don't even feel like trying because and he was catching himself in a good way. He's saying, I have sometimes noticed that I don't feel like trying because I almost want to be proven right that this relationship isn't going to work out.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so all sorts of weird things end up taking over when we step into resentment and we navigate from there. And a lot of times resentment can step in because one, we're not repairing, but also because we're not growing in the right direction. So much of what you encourage couples to do, especially during these times here, is to step into positive practices. Yeah. So one of them that you've mentioned before to me is a gratitude practice. What could that look like in these days for a couple?
Well, gratitude is one aspect of positive, we call it positive perspective. So gratitude would be finding things you're grateful in your partner, right? That's also kind of connected with appreciation. Appreciation is another thing of positive perspective. So you look for the good in your partner. You look for what your partner is doing right, not what they're doing wrong. And you acknowledge them for that. You appreciate them
And on a practical level, how would you suggest, like, literally, if a couple's not doing this and they're familiar with gratitude a little bit and, you know, maybe have a gratitude journal or more to themselves, if they're not doing themselves on a practical level, how would you suggest they bring it up and then schedule it and incorporate it into their relationship?
Well, that's an interesting thing. It could be, that could be another sort of daily thing, or maybe there could be a list of things that they do one each day or something where it brings connection. I mean, gratitude journal is perfect. But in terms of, I often think it's the small little things that couples do. So even if it's not scheduled, and a scheduled thing could really work for couples. A lot of couples do that and actually structure, hey, we're working on our relationship. These are things we've agreed on we're going to do. We're going to do a stress relieving conversation like I referred to earlier. We're going to practice but there are a couple of things I haven't even talked about. There's a love maps thing. There's certain...
Yeah, explain that. Explain the love maps.
So love maps. So love maps is really basically finding more about your partner and your partner's internal life, right? And there are things you ask questions about. What movie does your partner love, right? What are their dreams? Tell me a story about when you were really sad. And this is something that couples can really... deepen their experience of each other. And the thing is, you want to ask the questions, and you want to remember the answers, and you want to continue asking questions. You know, it's an ongoing process. Gottman, I know I refer a lot to him. He has some, I think online there's an app that has these cards that are called Love Map cards, and there's also Rituals of Connection cards. And these are things that might be really helpful for couples who, maybe this is new to them, maybe they haven't been in couples therapy, maybe referring to that couple before that you mentioned, maybe they're not used to talking, maybe their husband just, you know, like you said, didn't grow up in a home where he talked a lot. So maybe it's just not something that's practiced, it's not a muscle that he's used to using. So these cards can oftentimes be something that can be helpful because it's a structure, it's a guideline, and it provides the questions. So you don't have to come up with the questions. It makes it a lot easier. So
yeah, I believe there's like one that's a free iPhone app, you know?
Yeah. I think so. They're cards, and then there's the app where it's great. Yeah, absolutely. So those are, they have some that are about sexual questions. So if you want to, if you're feeling like you want to have more affection, more sexual intimacy, there are cards that can help you connect that way. I think they have mild and medium hot and spicy cards, three different sort of levels of questions. So those are types of things that a couple could integrate in terms of their daily life, in terms of like you're saying, like a gratitude or if they want to develop the relationship. The thing though, in terms of what I was saying, small acts, those are the things that really matter. Like waking up in the morning, and especially because we're spending so much time together, like what would it be like to wake up next to your partner and your partner turns and says, you know, I'm so happy I get to wake up next to you, right? That'd be a connection. Or say, you're getting out of the house, going for a walk, and you notice your partner is sort of holding their arms together, looks a little cold, and you say, hey, just one minute. You run inside, and you grab a sweater for your partner and bring it out. It's those type of things. It's say your partner's doing the dishes, and you're doing something, you walk by, you notice, and without saying anything, you just start drying the dishes, right? You participate in it with them. Those are the small acts of affection that we talk about that really help bring partners closer together, help them feel loved, valued, cherished. And those are the things that are going to actually help communication. The research shows that, I think I mentioned earlier, beginning that the way a conversation begins is the way it will go first 3 minutes. And I remember what it was talking about in terms of that statistics. It's around bids for connection. That I think after 6 years, couples who accepted bids of affection, I'll explain that in a second, the ones that did it, about 33% were more likely to be divorced after 6 years. Mm. Couples who stayed together, they had an 86% acceptance of bids for connection, bids for affection. And a bid for connection is really your partner sort of reaching out. It could be literally saying, hey, can you hold my hand, right? Now, it'd feel good if your partner reaches and holds your hand. that's called turning toward, accepting a bit of affection. So your partner says, my hand's really sweaty, I don't want to drink it. You know, okay, maybe there's a reason, but that doesn't feel so good. And that's, it's a form of turning away, not really accepting a bit. A partner could just ignore the comment and not hold your hand. And then that's what we call turning away. That's rejecting a bit. And that's something that leads to a negative sentiment override. That's a negative experience. And back to that statistic, that was a study that John Gottman was doing. And what they found that couples, in terms of positive and negative feelings and interactions, you need 5 positive interactions to 1 negative interaction. So that's the 5-to-1 ratio. That was the magic ratio of couples who stayed together, who were happy, and who felt fulfilled in their relationship. So Love Maps is a way of creating a positive interaction. The building a culture of appreciation and respect, you know, gratitude. Those are all things that create positive experiences for couples.
All different ways that we can be present to our partner and show them that they matter, that we're acknowledging them, and that we're there for them, which is especially important in this day and age where many of us are at home and the monotony and the repetitiveness of the day, and even the fact that, like, even traditionally couples who have date nights and right. now can't go out, and that right. was their way of connecting, right. you have to find new and unique ways to be able to navigate. And I think right. one of those ways to navigate is that, just the same way that in an economic downturn or a crisis, if you were a business owner or if you work at a job and you still are employed and you are in some level of management or can direct how a project goes, we're not just going to say, let's wait and see and hope that this works out for the best. Not that that is our hope. We're going right. to start pivoting in that company. We're going to meet regularly. We're going to start planning. We're going to run scenarios. We're going to look at, like, okay, what if things don't improve here? Or how do we need to change our business around? Or how do we need to change that? In almost a way, a couple and a family is a company. And if we don't lean into planning, and if we don't meet and say, okay, date night was an important way to us for us to create intimacy and connect and do something new and adventurous. We don't have the opportunity to go out now to restaurants. What's something new that we can do? And you have to put your head together like a boardroom meeting.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's an opportunity for great creativity, right? I love that analogy. It is like a business, right? And we put a lot of attention to our business. You know, we want to put a lot of attention to our relationship. You know, the commitment to that is also a real factor in relationships working. There are a lot of stresses, there are a lot of struggles, a lot of challenges today, and being with their partners 24/7 cooped up in the house. It also could be an opportunity for real connection and to deepen the relationship. We have time on our hands, some of us, you know, some have more than others. So why not take this time to do this? You know, like you're saying, be creative about, okay, what could date night look like? Great time to do Love Maps, like I was saying, or just asking your partner, what would they like to do? You know, and really being open to that, turning toward with, hey, yeah, hey, I know you like doing that. Let's do this. You know, suggesting that's another way your partner feels that you love them, you value them. Right. They feel known and seen. That's an important piece. That's another positive interaction.
I know one of the ways that I step into more love in my relationship is when I carve out alone time for me. And I think that especially during this time period where we're all spending so much time with each other, I think it is important still for couples to maintain some level of individuality, just like it's important for any human. Even if you weren't in a relationship or married or with your boyfriend or girlfriend, husband and wife, even if you were cooped up all day with your best friend, you're going to get on each other's nerves.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you're sleeping together, if you are doing everything together, you're cooking together, you're doing laundry together, then you're working in the same household, you're going to get annoyed with any other person. Even if you made a clone of yourself, you'd get annoyed at them for right. being too similar to you. How do you recommend that couples communicate, and what's the best way to go about carving alone time into our schedules? It's like some of that is just even, how do we even bring that up with a partner?
Well, you know, there you go. We think about soft and startup, right? I mean, that's such a great question. I think actually just saying, first of all, acknowledging something, right? honey, you know what? This time has been so good that we've had time with each other. And then maybe saying, I'm feeling like I would love to have a little time for myself because I want to regenerate. So I just wanted to let you know, if you, I'm going to take that now, unless you need me for something, and then check in. They don't. And then just, maybe let them know if you need an hour, a couple hours, or whatever you think you're going to do. You could sort of feel them in a little bit. You don't necessarily have to. Some partners might want to know a little more. But I think, again, just always use a softened startup. Use a way that is respectful of your partner and let you know that they're a part, that you're a team. You know, it's not just the me, it's the we. That, in a way, that actually... makes me think about accepting influence, where our partners, accepting influence is something that really helps a partnership feel tight, right? It means it feels like, it helps a couple feel like they're a team. Say a wife says, hey, honey, my parents want to go. Wouldn't happen probably now in this time, but my parents want to come over for dinner tonight. Can you help me out? You know, maybe the husband doesn't want to do that evening, but accepting influence would be, sure, let me help you. What do you need me to do? Right. And that would make the wife feel much better than if the partner said, you know what, I don't want to do that. I don't really have anything to do with it. I'm going to go off and work. Again, that's a sort of turning toward, turning away. So accepting influence is something that's really important. I'm going to make a generalization, which I don't always do, but women tend to be better at that than men. And what happens, and I think this is where some resentment builds up, is when one partner is always the one that's doing that. One partner is the one that's always sort of accepting the other's influence, but not having their influence accepted. And when that happens, a lot of resentment builds up. And then it begins, couples go tit for tat, you know, a negative response gets a negative response. So we want to watch out for those dynamics. I think it was Gandhi who said, an eye for an eye just leaves the world blind. Have you ever heard that?
So true. Yeah, I've heard that quote.
So that's... I don't know if that really answers your question.
It's a great answer. And I think part of this is like, so when we really take a step back, a big reason that we're doing this episode is that communication, when we actually deliver it, is very straightforward, very simple. It can be hard to do, right? It can be very hard for people to do and lean into communication, but it's very straightforward. Part of the reason we're doing this conversation is that we give you the inspiration that like a lot of other people are dealing with this, right? Different couples are dealing with this and you're not crazy for asking, right? Yeah. A lot of times partners feel like they have a whole story in their head of like, is this crazy? Am I the crazy one? Should I be asking? Is this too much? So if it's a genuine need, you can ask in the right way, but sometimes you just need a push to have that courageous conversation, even if it's simple and straightforward, and break through the stories that are there. So I want to jump into a couple more questions that we had from our audience in preparation for this interview. So one that came up specifically around something that we mentioned in your bio, which is attachment styles. So one that came up and said, how can people with avoidant, insecure attachment styles cultivate healthy relationships, especially during this time period? So could you explain what avoidant, insecure attachment is? And then maybe we'll go into answering the question.
Right. So, you know, attachment theory is based on the attachments we form with our early caregivers, usually from 0 to 2 years old. And there's, you know, healthy attachment, secure attachment. There's anxious attachment. There's anxious avoidant attachment. These different ways in which we learn how our caregivers were there for us. So if our caregivers attended to our needs, if they attuned to us, primary caregivers, then we usually form a healthy attachment, a secure attachment. If, for instance, our caregivers were not really present, sometimes they were, sometimes they weren't you know, necessarily attuned to us, then that can create an anxious attachment. You know, we're not quite sure, okay, what are they going to be there? Are they not? A caregiver who completely ignores is a strong word, but just does not attune at all, isn't there. And maybe occasionally is there, but then not, can create a really avoidant attachment.
And so it's almost internalizing that, okay, this, the way that I was loved and cared for at a young age with this person would sort of maybe, or the perception that this person would avoid my needs. So that's how I prefer to interact.
Right. Well, the avoidance actually is the person avoids, not the caregiver. Right. So because to attach means that I'm going to get hurt. I'm not going to get my needs met. Right. Mm. So no one's going to be there for me. So that's the that's what the person would learn. So they learn that, hey, relationships aren't safe. I need to avoid relationships because if I attach, I'm only going to get hurt. I'm going to get abandoned.
Right? Attachment means pain. So I'm going to avoid, and that's going to help me stay away from that pain.
That's right. So first of all, this person is in a relationship, then they've actually been, and they have an avoidant attachment. What did you say? Avoidant anxious? Which attachment did they have?
Yes. Avoided anxious. Yep.
Anxious. Okay. So kudos, right? To even be able to attach.
Oh, sorry. Avoidant insecure. Is
insecure.
That?
Insecure. Yeah. Insecure. That's kind of the same thing, actually. Yes. So, you know, in some ways they've already learned to attach. Part of what's really important, I think, with attachment, is for each partner to understand the other. And that's where these conversations, that's where love maps actually can help. But often when I work with couples, I do something called reflective listening. And it's a great tool. I should talk about that too, because it's something that really any couple can do. And I think of it as sort of just like the baseline. I mean, it is just something I always go back to. And it's, again, I talk about working the muscle. And what it does, it creates listening, it creates empathy, it creates connection. And by doing that, it's also, when I do that exercise, I'll explain in just a second, I will see things come up. And oftentimes attachment styles will show up in that. And then I can work with it. Let me explain the reflective listening. Say, especially in a disagreement, and this is also part of a repair. I talked about repair earlier. One partner is a listener and one partner is a speaker. And the listener's job is just to listen to the speaker. And the speaker, I always have them speak in maybe a short paragraph. And what they're going to do, and they're going to try and say it in I feel statements, not blaming. There's something in Gottman called the four horsemen, which is criticism, contempt, defensiveness, and stonewalling. Contempt being the number one predictor of divorce, by the way. So those communication, how would I describe them? They're not effective. Yeah, exactly.
Pitfalls.
Right. They really interfere with productive communication. And they're present in most couples to varying degrees. Couples who are really successful are able to identify them really quickly and make repairs, right? Oops, I said that badly.
I didn't mean it that way. I take it back.
Right, yeah, really meant. Exactly. So, but in couples that where they're not happy, those are really present. I watch for those in this particular exercise. Like if it's criticism, I will say, okay, can you say that in a softened startup, right? You know, it might be, you know what, you don't ever think of me. You said you would call and you didn't, we agreed. You're just so selfish, right? So a startup might be, you know what, I was scared when you didn't call. We had agreed that you would call and I wish that you had, right? So that's sort of issuing, that's kind of a complaint, right? But it's also doing a feeling. That's how I would have the couple or that person over speaking try and say it in stop and startup. So I work with couples how to say things differently. But in this exercise, the listener just listens to the speaker. The speaker speaks in a shorter paragraph. The listener reflects back what the listener heard. And using as much as the exact words as you can, you know, it actually makes it easier. rather than having to come up with an interpretation, make it sound better, just reflect back as much as you can the way you have said.
So in that instance, okay, so honey, this is what I'm hearing from you. When I didn't call, you know, the last week, even though we had agreed about it the night before, it left you feeling scared and uncertain and such and such and such and worried. And it was kind of built upon the other time that I didn't do it. And that's what I'm hearing from you. So you're repeating back what the other person is.
What the other person said, exactly. And then say, did I get that? Right.
Did I get that?
Great. Right. And so then that gives the partner, the speaker, the opportunity to say, yeah, you got it. Right. Or to say, yeah, that's what I said, but actually, that's actually not what I meant. Let me say it again.
Because by the way, I think that's something so important here that I just want to acknowledge. So many fights in relationship is a couple saying, but you said that, but you said that last week, but you said that. I want to say this for everybody who's listening. People don't always say what they mean. Sometimes they need to talk it out and hear what they need to say and then say, actually, no, that's not what I meant.
That's exactly right. And this exercise is a perfect way of doing that. It also to that point, the partner might say, no, that's not what I said. Here's what I said. And then you say, and then the person repeats it again. Right? Did I get it? What this also does, it also helps the listener calm down, right? Because by knowing that they're going to reflect it back, it does a couple of things. First of all, they're listening. So they're hearing it once. They're not thinking about their reply or their defense, right?
Yeah. In return, how am I going to rebuke this?
Right, because they really have to listen, right? So then when they speak it back, it reinforces it again. So it does that. By the speaker hearing it back and then saying yes or no, it actually gets them an opportunity to be clear about what they're wanting to say. So I do this, and when couples get good at it, they can kind of go back and forth. When I'm first starting with couples, we might be with the speaker for 30 minutes, but they're short paragraphs, but really having a chance to be heard, really, and being known. So that's a big part of repair. The listener does not have to agree with it, you know. In fact, probably might not. You know, when you have two people, you have two subjective experiences, and both of them are valid. And that's another.
Even if you don't agree, it's such an important exercise to slow things down and bring in a sense of connection between two people.
That's right. Because if you say to your partner, you can say, "Yeah, I understand why you felt like you didn't matter when I didn't call. That makes a lot of sense to me." So that's going to feel good. Even if the person who didn't call was like, gosh, I had so much to do. And then the car wouldn't start. And then this, and you know, all these reasons, these good reasons, the partner will ultimately get to speak those things, but it won't just be in response to the speaker's first words, because then it will feel defensive. It'll feel like you're defending it and sort of ignoring what the speaker's experience is, which is she was scared. She didn't know what had happened. Something had happened to the person.
Which, by the way, when you take the time to understand someone else, they're more likely to take the time to understand you.
Absolutely. I say this all the time. It feels horrible to feel misunderstood by our partners, to feel mischaracterized by our partners. By the people we love most is when it hurts the most, when we feel that they think something differently of us than what was happening, than our intention. So our natural inclination is to fight to be understood. No, you don't understand. No, that's not what I meant. This is, right? We do that. Well, what happens is that doesn't get us what we want.
It's a downward spiral for both people and the relationship.
That's right. The downward spiral. So then you're off to the races. And no one's hearing each other, and both are then fighting to be understood. What I say to couples, and I'll say this to your listening public here, rather than fighting to be understood, we want to fight to understand. So whoever can get to that in the moment.
That's a great quote, by the way. That's an incredible quote.
When we're fighting, it is hard. You know, listen, we're activated. It's tough. But if one, just whoever can remember it first can say, wait a minute, let me stop explaining my position. Let me try to understand my partner's position. Let me try to understand what they're saying here. So go to curiosity. Go to asking questions. Go to breathing. Take a deep breath. And just And remember, you know, this is my partner. This is someone I love. This is not my adversary. Then that creates a positive, again, a positive feeling. And sometimes those are important things to remember. Oftentimes is we want to remember what we love about our partner, what attracted us to our partner. You know, what are some of the great experiences we had? When we keep those in mind, and you spoke of gratitude earlier, that's a form of gratitude. We want to tap back into that, like being grateful for that, being grateful that my partner did this. Those positive feelings about our partners create an atmosphere within us so that we can then respond from those places, those rather than a negative, oh, they're always doing this and they're always doing that. Because, yeah, you know, our partners, like you said, they get on our nerves at times, right? But there's also this positive feeling that we want to try and remember and keep attached to that.
So it's so well said. And I think that it's like, it's usually in my experience, I would love to hear yours because you've obviously been working with couples that are out there. It also, there's sometimes this myth and idea that couples have to be 50-50 and that's how we get to 100. But at least when it comes to leading conversations that can create repair or going in a different direction, it's usually whoever has the insight on that in the beginning, especially if a couple has not been practicing healthy communication and repairing and using soft starters, it's usually one person has to take the lead. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Absolutely. This actually refers back to, I was talking about the polarity within couples, right? Where we're different. And look, if one person is the only one ever initiating repairs and making them, that, like I said a little earlier, kind of leads to resentment. If one person is the one that's only doing that. Now, unless maybe there's a person that's able to do that because of their own makeup, right? Maybe they had a secure attachment and maybe the other person, gosh, I've gotten off that track, that other person who had the sort of insecure avoidant attachment, right? So that might not be something they're able to do. However, that person might have a strength there and that might bring that to the relationship. So that's another thing about it, and being rather than blaming your partner or saying they're not good enough or they don't do something right because they don't do it the way you do it, actually saying, gosh, I'm glad you're doing that. You're so organized because I don't like being organized. And so our kitchen is really well stocked, you know, and thank God you did that. So we have this now in this time. Right? And then the other person is like, well, I'm glad you're so creative and not so stuck in rules and rigidity so that we can actually kind of enjoy this moment, right? And be able to play a little. So it's finding those, finding a positive way to look at our partners so the differences can actually become strengths rather than things that we find ways to criticize our partner. You asked me something. I kind of got off track and I don't read from the
book. I think I got off track too, and I probably got you off track because I interrupted you, so my apologies.
I'm used to listening more. This is talking. Maybe I talk a lot more.
But Michael, I think that all these things have been incredible, and I really just think that the theme that you're, especially and we together here, are trying to bring up here is that when we put attention in that area, we can actually do something different. If we don't put attention into our communication with our partner, which is the foundation of everything, it's difficult. And yes, people are busy. And yes, it's extremely difficult for parents who are at home who are also trying to homeschool. But if we can't carve out time for intentional communication and connection, there are so many ways that things can go wrong from there.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. It's like you have to water the flower, right, to see it grow.
You have to water the flower. Any concluding thoughts that you want to bring in here? You know, I think that there's one final question I have for you, which is that so many times I feel that the reason why it's so difficult for people to break patterns is that we're the hardest on ourselves. And if we actually heard if we talk to ourselves, or if we talk to our partner, or our best friend, or our parents, or our kids, the way that we talk to ourselves, it would be apparent how crazy our communication and our self-talk is.
Absolutely.
A lot of times, I think people have a lot of guilt and sometimes shame in terms of where their communication as a couple is, and that they haven't been putting attention to it, or they're hard on themselves. And so it's like, we should have done this. We should have done this better. And we should have paid attention to this before. And any words of advice that you'd give to anybody who's listening here that feels that with their relationship?
Oh, absolutely. You know what? I think you have to give yourself a break. I mean, relationships are hard. It's not like we went to school and we learned how to do it. You know, we might have had, if we were really, really, really lucky, we might have had a really good role model, right? Maybe our parents were really great communicators and we learned perfectly. But that's very, very rare. You know, no one taught us to soften startup. We didn't learn that. We didn't learn how to, you know, build the emotional bank account. I actually didn't even talk about that. That's where, you know, basically it's the positive and negative sentiment override, right? So building an emotional bank account means we're doing a lot of things. We're accepting those bids for connection. We're, you know, understanding the love maps. We're building a culture of appreciation. You know, all of those things go into the emotional bank account. And it's literally like an account. You put those positive, you make those deposits, make the deposit. And then when there's something negative that happens, then okay, there's a withdrawal, but if we have enough in the bank account, then we're
In fact, the way that you say it is that if you truly know that it's like you get that emotional bank account when it's positive, you know that fundamentally your partner has your back. So even if something goes wrong or there's a snafu or a situation, it's like, I know they have my back. There's so many things that have been built up on both sides.
That's exactly right. That's the thing that gives the benefit of the doubt. And that's you know, the more we keep in mind all the positive aspects of our relationship, the more that we respond from that place. We respond with generosity to our partners, you know, with openness, with acceptance, with forgiveness. Right. And to the point about feeling like, you know, oh my God, I talk so badly to my partner. Or I don't know how to do this. We're so bad. We're not really, while we are social creatures, connection, we're also sort of come from a me place, right? So we aren't really taught how to be in relationship in a way that's really, really healthy. I shouldn't say all of us, but I think it's something that has to be learned. And if we are really hard on ourselves, it's because we learned that from someone. If we learned that from someone, that means that's part of what we were learning about relationship. Even if it was a relationship, go ahead.
Oh no, please.
No, even if it's like a relationship from parent-child, that's a relationship and that's how we learn, right? So if we are hard on ourselves, if we're critical of ourselves, we learn that. And that's what we learned about relationships. So there's a lot of relearning. So I say, forgive yourself, you know, give yourself a break and say, gosh, you know what, honey, this is hard, but we really want to do it. Let's try this again. Or, you know, I just want you to know I love you and I'm so happy I'm with you, even though I might be angry right now. So I think that's why I was drawn to Gottman, to be honest. I had been working with, in fact, I never actually thought I would work with couples. This is really true. I had went into this work and I had a horrible ending to a relationship that just brought me to my knees. And so when I started doing this work, I thought, well, you know, I can't work with couples. It's like, I don't look at this. I don't, what do I know about couples, right? And I started working with them just by accident. And I started getting referrals. And I did have a knack for it, I guess. But a colleague of mine, Dr. Laurie Grapes, who's a fantastic therapist, and she had suggested, hey, let's study some Gottman together. And we both went through the certification process. And it's been life-changing for me personally. And it's really changed my practice in such a positive way. Couples were getting benefit before, but after this is so practical. And there are things that you can learn, and there's structured exercises, and then they don't have to be a structure for people who don't work as well with that. But they're concepts which are easy to grasp and they're simple. They're not always easy. You know, but when you practice it, and I use the analogy of going to the gym, just working these muscles that we haven't worked before. And all of these things are based on research. You know, it's not like, you know, they just made them up. If they had, they would still be effective, but it's based on really sound research. They continue to do research. In fact, I'm actually participating as one of the therapists. There are 20 of us from around the world with John and Julie on a new pilot program research project, which I'm not really at liberty to talk about now. Yeah, but it's exciting, right? So they're constantly still doing research, and they're just amazing. So that's why I really love Gottman, and why I think that, you know, if you're feeling bad about your relationship, or you're feeling like you don't know what you're doing, welcome to the club, right? And you know, there are books to read. They're just, even these four horsemen are great things to sort of learn about and begin to watch for. And they offer antidotes to them. So if one's feeling defensive, here's the antidote to how to respond to that. So I think this is I really believe in therapy in general. I've been in it for a lot of my life. It's been very helpful, very meaningful for me. And I see it with couples. You know, it might not be for every couple, but there's certainly ways to improve the relationship just by reading. Grab some of one of Gottman's books, Seven Keys to a Successful Marriage?
Yeah, I think so.
Seven
Key Principles to a Successful Marriage.
That's it, yeah. That's sort of one of his sort of basic ones, but he has over 20 books to read. Mm. Yeah, so it sounds like I'm plugging him, but I just really believe in it.
Yeah, and what I like about you, Michael, is that, you know, obviously I sought you out because I was looking for a therapist who was familiar and trained in the Gottman method, because I had read some of their books. And but you have your own life experiences and other training too, and so you have your own twist on it, which is really useful. And I've referred a few couples to you, and thank you so much for taking such great care of them here in Los Angeles. And, you know, I chat and my friends are very open with each other, and the couples that I've referred over to you, they just really love the way that you explain things, the way that you break things down. I think the interesting thing about couples therapy is that I've noticed from friends in the past who have either entered couples therapy because something is wrong, or which is the vast majority of people. And then now sometimes with a little bit of, like, you know, the younger generation, as therapy as a whole is not as stigmatized. It's like some of my friends who are like, okay, there's nothing wrong per se, like, you know, nothing fundamentally, but we want to be better. So if we see a doctor to help us better in the integrative space, and if we work with a trainer to help us better on that, why can't we work with a therapist as like a coach in a way? Right. And what I've noticed, interestingly enough, is that finding the right therapist is very unique. One person might like that person, another person might not like that person, and that sort of thing. Right. And is there taking one person's side and not? And just everybody I've sent over to you, and I think that a big reason why is because Gottman methodology, again, which you're trained in, has such a unique approach to therapy. Right. Will actually, you know, the traditional therapy, for those who are not familiar with traditional couples therapy, sometimes a therapist won't chime in and say, hey, look, that's maybe a harsh start. They'll just let one person talk forever and then another person talk. And often, if I would say blank generalizations in a traditional, let's say, male female relationship, right, the generalizations that I hear often for guys is that, well, I went to therapy with my partner, and she just went through a list of 13 different things were wrong, and I don't even know where to start.
Right.
Or on the woman's side, it's like, well, we went to therapy and I explained all these things and he just didn't say anything. He just sat there and my therapist didn't say anything. It's like both of those are red flags, not just in the relationship, but it's more about the therapist chiming in and saying, hey, look, okay, it seems like you're overwhelmed right now. Let me show you why actually it's important. Let's just practice the reflective exercise, right? Or, hey, actually, I'm going to stop you. And instead of getting into this third thing, why don't we just stick to the first thing and see if your partner can acknowledge that and see how they can take that in. And you do such a great job about that. You know, I've been pretty open about my relationship on online, but my girlfriend and I, Yasmin, we came to see you pretty early, because I told her, I said, you know, when we're serious about being serious, I would love to go to a therapist, like a coach, and help us be on the same page about, are we ready to be moving in with each other? And are we on the same page about marriage? And so we worked with you. And then we also did this Gottman 52 deck of cards.
Yeah.
Through that process, which took us almost about 3-4 months to complete, right? We would do a few a week, and we eventually got to the 52. And it was so fantastic to be able to work with you in that process and navigate. And initially, she, you know, I asked her if I could talk about all this stuff ahead of time, and she said, yeah, no problem at all. initially she was like, what are we going to talk about? We don't even have enough relationship. At that point in time, we hadn't even been together for, I think, 3-4 months. But we came to you, and lo and behold, immediately the first conversation, there was plenty to talk about. The second conversation, we got into some deep fundamental things that actually have been beautiful themes that we've got a chance to work on continuously as our relationship has evolved. So one, I want to acknowledge how you show up for all the people that you work with, the friends of mine that you've taken care of, and how you've supported me in my own relationship and built such an incredible foundation. And number two, thank you for opening up and sharing about, you know, how many people in their field end up becoming an expert because they've gone through their own pain. And you got there through a breakup. How I originally found out through Gottman is I was in an emergency situation in my relationship where it was somebody that I wanted to continue to build with. And we were just fighting and butting heads nonstop. And I was like, there's gotta be a better way. And I came across the books. And you know what? I want to say one thing while I'm on my rant here. I want to say one other thing. I asked that partner if they would be open to therapy. And you know what? They were doing the best they can at that time, but they said no. And that to me was, okay, they're saying no for wherever they are, right? To just at least navigate. They can't do it right now for a whole host of reasons. But you know what? I need to be in a relationship that can. Because it's not going to be able to thrive. And so that was one of the things that I was like, okay, cool. For all the right reasons for you, you can't do this. I actually don't see how we can navigate this together. And ultimately that ended up becoming the conclusion of the relationship. Not in a negative, you know, it doesn't have to be a negative or mean way. It just was a reflection of, if you can't talk about this with another person, which sometimes we need another person to help us navigate that, then it may not work out. And in that situation, it didn't work out.
Absolutely. You know, and that really, I think, speaks to you, Drew, and your own sense of self and your own needs, and not necessarily blaming, making someone wrong, but also saying, this is what I need, right? This is what I want. And this is what I want for a relationship. And maybe she's not signing up for that. There's something else she's wanting, right? And just being able to, rather than fight and try to change her, right, you were able to say, okay, there'll be someone who will. I mean, those are my words, but I think that's actually a perfect metaphor for in relationship too. Okay, we can't really change our partners, but we also want partners who are going to want to work with us, who are going to want to be in the relationship, who want to, I'll use this in a positive sense, fight for the relationship, right? And to build that commitment and know, hey, they're in this with me, right? That builds strength for a relationship. That builds security. You know,
there's never been more stressors on a relationship that I truly believe than in the history of humanity. Because again, we're asking more from one person. We're trying to have desire with the person. We're trying to have stability. You know, there's all sorts of things. We're living longer, right? We're not in a with other people. But there's also never been more of an opportunity for people to lean in and actually take the control of their relationship and actually grow. And that's why I'm very excited about these times that we're in. You do have to fight for your relationship because of all these different factors that are at play for it. Michael, if there is anybody here that's interested in couples coaching and wants to work with you, you know, how's that process look? You know, how can they reach out to you?
You know, you can reach out to my website, although that's being restructured right now. It should be back up in a couple of...
But there is your contact information there and everything, so they can still...
Yeah, absolutely. And just reach out. I mean, it's busy time, obviously. Lots is going on. But I'm happy to speak with anyone. And if it feels like a fit, they'd like to come in or do it online. I do couples coaching around, you know, outside of California. And that can be very effective. In fact, I'm doing all online sessions right now during this epidemic, you know, as we are quarantined. And a lot of couples who have been working with me in person, after our first session online, most of them they say, wow, this was a lot better than we thought it was going to be, you know, and it is different in the room, but really with couples, you know, it's about the couples. It's about what they're communicating and helping them connect. I work really dyadically. I really have couples try to talk to each other because that's what we're wanting you know, we don't want, I love working with my couples and it's great, but ideally I want my couples to be able to do this themselves, right? And some can come in for a tune-up and then some really need a lot of practice and help at first. But the idea is to be able to do it themselves. So I work, have couples talk with each other and it can be really uncomfortable at first and I completely normalize it, but we want to try and create a safe space for that. And so it actually works pretty well online. And sometimes couples are in their own space and I'm actually finding that's an advantage in this time when online is that they're having this experience in their own homes as well. So that makes it a little more familiar. I do all my own ones, online sessions out of my office. So that also creates that sort of container. So they're at least seeing me in my office.
Any boundaries that you would give to couples? Like if they're working for you, like, is there any boundaries that you give to the couples that you're working with on there? Like, okay, make sure, you know, like besides the basics, like make sure your phone is off, that, you know, is there anything else that you say, like for people who are like, well, how would therapy, you know, so how would, sorry, coaching work if we're at our place? Is there any other boundaries to really have it be a sacred and safe space either before, after, or during?
You know, I haven't really discussed that a lot with couples. I have, I'm trying to think, I mean, couples with kids, a lot of times they want to find a space that their children can't hear them, and that can be a little difficult when it's going out until they have a guest house. I'm seeing their pets a lot of times. One couple where there's stuff with their pet that brings about stuff, and so I got to meet the pet. And usually most sort of know how to take care of themselves. It's interesting, I don't want to share too much, but one couple has an issue with the phone thing going and one of the phone went off and I actually got to sort of see the interaction of what happened.
So in a way it actually brought some good material for the session.
Exactly. So I just sort of work with what's there and it's interesting talking about it because Drew, I work with it. You know, that's what I do. I'm used to working with couples and it's a very different experience to see what comes with the couple and how to work with that sort of, so to talk about it without actually working with it has been an interesting experience. You've made it really easy and interesting and asked some really thoughtful questions. And I'll probably have some really think of like the best answer or a great answer after we finish this.
That's how it always is. That's how it always is. Well, I want to conclude off on, you know, I read so much about this space and communication and, not just because I'm interested in how to be a better partner, because I definitely am, but everything that makes me a better partner helps me as a CEO to my, you know, 60 plus employees.
Absolutely.
Everything that helps me as a CEO makes me better in my family. And everything that helps me in my family makes me better at talking about money and opening up to my friends for support in my life if I need it. So everything helps everything. And that's why I put attention on this. And one area that I've just found that is still, no matter how great your partner is, still, it can be helpful to have a third party because there's so much history and nobody knows how to push your buttons like your partner does and you to also them, even whether it's done in, you know, on purpose or subconsciously or other things like that. So I just recommend that, you know, whether it's Michael or whether it's somebody else in your area, if a couple wants to grow, even if things are okay and there's not big fights, work with a therapist. It'll improve your relationship. It'll improve, work with a coach. It'll improve that aspect, which will also improve your communication with your kids, which will improve your communication at work and every other thing that's there. So,
yeah. You know. Can I add to that?
Please, please.
I think that's really, really important. I think about couples work as work for the world, really. If we create more love with each other, then we have more to give. And, you know, this, the world can use it. The world can use being able to get along better and understand different positions. You know, we're very polarized in the world as well, certainly in this country. And so if we learn how to work with polarization within ourselves, within our individual selves, also within us, ourselves as couples, I think that helps. And I think the idea about communication and remember that's really important. And, you know, I'm not saying everyone needs to go to couples therapy, but I think that some of these deeper issues, for instance, we talk about attachment, I think that can really be, working with a therapist who understands that can be really helpful because it's hard to just sort of talk about and understand yourself. It's really, how does that impact the dynamic of the relationship? It doesn't have to be a lot of long-term work, but that can be really helpful when it's thinking of that particular couple that had written into you. Because when your partner understands what's happening, it makes it much more, we have much more empathy. those two examples we talked about, you know, Eric Bogosian's play and watching the 90-minute movie of a person. So I would encourage that. And there's this saying that even a very large house gets very small when couples aren't communicating. And I think that's even more true now, you know, when we're locked inside. So if we're distancing and not connecting, no matter how big the house is, it's going to feel really, really small, you know, because it doesn't feel good.
Mm. Well said. Michael, thank you so much for coming on the podcast, sharing your wisdom, your knowledge, your experience, a little bit of your story, which was really great to hear, and for being there for our listeners. If our audience wants to find you, they can find you at michaellatimer.com. Do you do any social media or anything like that?
You know, I don't. I'm a dinosaur in that area.
Well, we'll see after this. Maybe you'll get some invites to some other podcasts. If you're a podcast to host and you want to have Michael on your podcast, you can reach out to him through his website. Again, Michael, thank you for chatting to me on a Sunday, nonetheless, when we're recording this. I truly appreciate you and how you are and how you show up for other people.
Oh, Drew, thank you so much. It's been my pleasure. And thank you for all the good work that you do and who you model to be in the world. It's very inspiring to me. So thank you.
Thank you. Hi, everyone. I hope you enjoyed the interview. Just a reminder, this podcast is for educational purposes only. This podcast is not, I repeat, it's not a substitute for professional care by a doctor or otherwise qualified medical professional. This podcast is provided on the understanding that it does not constitute medical or other professional advice or services. If you're looking for help in your journey, seek out a qualified medical practitioner. If you're looking for a functional medicine practitioner, you can visit ifm.org and search their Find a Provider database. It's important that you have somebody in your corner that's qualified, that's trained, that's a licensed healthcare practitioner helping you make changes, especially when it comes to your health.